Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. And as I say, every episode, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick the podcast up here on the podcast feed. And this episode is going to be a review of The Gold Coast by Kim Stanley Robinson. A little bit of update of what I've been doing recently. Yeah, this is actually taking me quite a long time to finish this book, mainly because, well, I'm on holiday and I've been at the European Juggling Convention, which is the largest gathering of jugglers in the world each year. And this year it was in Vitoria in Basque Country in Spain. And yeah, a lot of fun I had. Didn't do very much reading though. I think I managed to read around about 10 pages in my book from like in the 9 days of the convention. So of course it took me quite a long time to get through this book. But yeah, anyway, now I've finished that part of my holiday. I got into it and polished it off quite quickly because I really enjoyed this book. I don't think I've got any more news. Except, yeah, if you actually want to follow all my photos from the festival that I've been to or all my holidays, anyway, you can just go to lukeburridge.com/blog and you can find it all there if you're interested. So I'll just get straight on with the review this time out. So this book is actually the second in a series of three books, but it's not a series that you've got to read in order in any particular order, let me put it that way, because it's not a book that's set like a story part A, part B, part C. It's actually sort of three kind of different looks or different plays or different riffs on the same theme or on sort of kind of same theme, different themes, but spread over three different views of the future of the same part of America, and that is Orange County in California. So in the first book of the series called The Wild Shore, it tells the story of a group of, I think, young teenage friends, and they're sort of growing up and sort of trading, you know, at farmers markets and fishing, and they go on little adventures and they dig things up and they, you know, talk to an old man called Tom and sort of hang out with him and find out about the world from him. And you know, generally find out about the wider world later on in the book, bigger adventures as they go along, that kind of stuff. And it's set in this post-apocalyptic world with very little technology and very few people. There's massively reduced population after some kind of, well, I'm guessing some kind of nuclear war scenario there. And there are still big powers in the world. You know, you're thinking, you know, off the coast somewhere there's Russia and Japan doing things off the Californian coast, but you never really quite understand what's going on there until later in the book. And yeah, big mystery there, and you get through it all. And again, I can't really remember a whole lot about the story. There's lots of individual, like, parts and the different characters I seem to remember quite well. But then again, this is Kim Stanley Robinson we're talking about, so you don't really read just for the sake of the story. You're looking at a lot more than just story going on. A lot of other things going on than just story. The Gold Coast is the second book in the series, and I might as well just introduce it now. Written in, I think, 1987 or 1988 or something like that. 98, it says here. And it's around about 400 pages long. And this book is the opposite, almost the opposite book of The Wild Shore. Instead of no technology and no people, here you've got high level of technology, if not too much technology, and of course way too many people. So I'll just set the world up here that I normally do here at the beginning of my podcast. The world of this book, as I said before, is Orange County, and it's set in around about, what, 2030 or something? I'm guessing around about 35, 40 years into the future from when it was written back in 1988. So yeah, let's say about 2030. And Orange County is the county south of Los Angeles in California, and it's completely overrun in the future. There's no space at all. It's all freeways. You can't reach the ground at any point. You know, there's layers and layers and layers of the city gone down there as well, and there's no orange groves left in Orange County, and it's all electric cars and things like that. Which is, you know, it's sort of like this, I guess it's meant to be some kind of dystopia kind of setup there, but it's very, very much like 1980s America in many, many ways, because they seem to have the same fears. The Russians are still around, you know, the Cold War isn't over yet. There's all talk about nuclear war as well, and lots of, you know, sort of like, you know, talking about suburbia and urban sprawl, and like I say, lots of, it ticks lots of 1980s boxes in a way. He does, Kim Stanley Robinson does seem to miss quite a few key technologies, like, for the future, but I think a lot of authors did that in the 1980s. They completely missed what the internet was going to do in the 1990s and onwards, you know, and mobile phones. Nobody really saw them coming in, you know, and internet, you know, all that kind of communication. So there's very few communications. But then I really think this plays into sort of like the overbearingness of the car in the future, in the Gold Coast here. It's all very much based on the car. He calls it autopia, as in like, as in automobile utopia, in a way. So, you know, if you want to do something, you've got to drive there. If you want to see someone, you've got to drive to meet them. If you want to talk to someone or give them a message, you drive there and you give them the message, or you pick something up and like that kind of stuff. And of course, nature doesn't exist, but, you know, everything is overlaid by roads and the car. And it's the car, and it's the car, and it's the car. And it's electric cars, of course, self-guided cars. But that's what you get, really. And yeah, so that's pretty much the world that we're in here, sort of like this, lots of skyscrapers, lots of elevated freeways running through Orange County. And because it's a Kim Stanley Robinson book, in case you're wondering, yes, the landscape and the world and the culture plays a massive part in this book, because that's what Kim Stanley Robinson does. You know, his like Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars series, it's as much about Mars itself as the characters in the story. I mean, the Mars is a character in the story. And so I've reviewed his book Antarctica for this podcast series as well. And, you know, there's a reason why he names his books after locations rather than after events or after people. It's because the locations are really what it's about. The thing is with this book, unlike Mars and Antarctica, which are two places that I've always wanted to visit, you know, I've got no desire at all to ever visit Orange County. Antarctica was this dream location. You know, it was, oh, yeah, I really want to go to Antarctica. And that dream was massively reinforced, actually, by Kim Stanley Robinson's novel itself called Antarctica. And when I visited Antarctica a few years ago, I was just like, wow, this is amazing. It sort of fulfilled all my expectations, you know, over the short time I was there. And, of course, the book Antarctica really wrapped up what Antarctica was like in so many different ways. The thing is, this book is around about Orange County, and I'm just like, meh. You know, it's like closely bound to the geography and the history and the culture. But it's, for me, it's just like this random county in California. It doesn't really grab me at all. But it doesn't make it any less real. I mean, he's definitely painted a very real landscape here, a very real city. And the people who live in it, the characters who live in it, have a very real experience going through it, and in great detail, which of course I'll get into a bit later as well when I talk about some of the writing style here. But, you know, sometimes you want a book set on Mars rather than in some random city in America. But then again, I guess that's a big part of it. It is just a random city with not a lot of special stuff going on there. And that really plays into the themes of the book too. The story. Main character is called Jim. He's like this middle-class loser dude. And he's got like these two dead-end jobs. He teaches at a school, and he works in like a real estate office, filing stuff, you know, typing and filing stuff like that. But he spends most of his out of office time partying with friends, and normally the friends he's with are like these three members of his high school wrestling team. But he's long out of school. He's by about maybe 10 years, maybe left school 10 years ago or something like that. And he's trying to get control of his life, and he's trying to find direction, and he wants to write poetry and maybe a bit of history. And he's generally dissatisfied and disaffected, and he's like attention deficit, and, you know, he's like this wannabe intellectual. He reads all the time but never really settles his thoughts ever, anywhere. Like the beginning of the book, he's like, oh, I want to get into Zen Buddhism and meditation, but he can't meditate because it's just too difficult for him. And yeah, he's a bit of a loser and a bit of an idiot as well. His father, though, is a very successful technician. He works for, his name's Dennis. He works for the, I think it's Laguna Research, Space Research thing. It is a weapons manufacturer company thing. And he's in charge of really high-tech weapons programs. And he's also losing control of his life, and he's struggling to get it back in some ways. And Jim's mother, called Lucy, she works for the church, and she's trying to fill her life by helping other people. And then there's his friends, like I mentioned, his friends before, and others. There's Sandy, who's a drug dealer, and there's Abe, who works as a paramedic. And there's Tashi, who doesn't do anything. He sort of hangs around and sort of does odd jobs here and there, but sort of tries to stay out of the system. And they all have their own problems, and they all have their own individual lifestyles and things like that. And again, like all Kim Stanley Robinson books, you're reading about these people and you're going, okay, what's really going on here? What's the real story? And, you know, you've been introduced to these characters and you're following their lives and you skip around a bit. You're sort of meandering through their lives. And then suddenly, well, not suddenly, but it builds up to Jim gets involved with this sort of, like this small group. It's like the mysterious group who's sort of fighting back against the system. And the way that they're fighting back is by sabotaging weapons factories. And of course, you're suddenly like, ah, ha, ha. As soon as you read that, you're thinking, wait a second, about 100 pages into the book this is. You're thinking, wait a second, I can see what's going to happen here. Jim's father works in this high technology weapons company. And you sort of go, dot, dot, dot. You're like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. And but thankfully, the story is actually quite good. It's a little bit more complex than I first imagined it with that setup. You're thinking, okay, where's it going? But it does take a long time to get through it. The author here, Kim Stanley Robinson, he seems to, like, he goes, okay, here's a little bit of action. And wait a second, now let you meander through this description. Here's some anecdotes, here's some little character development bit over here, some conversations between two characters, here's a little diversion, here's a little trip that doesn't have anything to do with the main plot, and now here's another little bit of action, and the plot goes forwards a bit, and now let's go over on this round of different characters and find out what's going on in their lives and take on this kind of stuff and take over here and look over here and hey, what's up here? So it does take a long time to get through, but actually I thought the story was quite satisfying. You know, it's really not about the weapons factory plot and about, you know, Dennis's father and stuff. I mean, that is a lot to do with it, but it is, of course, about the journeys that the characters go on as much as the action sequences would or you'd want the action sequences to progress sort of some wider plot. And, of course, in the end of the book, well, maybe not of course, but at the end of the book, things seem to come in a circle in many ways, and you sort of end up with the characters in different positions, but sort of life continuing on as normal, which is actually quite satisfying in a way. The characters, I've mentioned a few so far. They're all quite well-rounded, except for actually some of Jim's female friends, because Jim seems to see these people, or his female friends and his girlfriends, as pretty much as a set of breasts with some blonde hair hovering somewhere above, and sort of maybe some annoying habits to go along with it. But again, because Jim sees them that way, we, as the reader, we're like, I could have wanted a little bit more from some of the female characters, but we do get it from some, but not all of them, and not anyone that Jim seems to get involved with, except one person, which is, I guess, is a small point. You know, there's like, what am I trying to say? Yeah, like, when suddenly an interesting woman turns up about two-thirds of the way through the book, or about half the way through the book, you're like going, oh, I wonder if this is the new interest, you know, the love interest. And of course it is, and that happens so often in these books over and over again. One thing that I didn't like a little bit at the beginning is because Kim Stanley Robinson wanted to show that Sandy and Jim and Tashi and Abe were all this sort of group of this close-knit group of friends, and all of them were equal and none of them was more important than the other in this group. In some ways, he just goes, okay, right at the beginning of the book, he goes, okay, here's four friends and let's do it. And you're a little bit confused. Oh, I was at least a little bit confused at the beginning. I was going, well, who's this person? And we learn about them and then we only catch up with them later on. So he sort of introduces them all at once, and then we only work out actually whose story it is a little bit later, and then we work out the different characters. But each of these characters has quite a good story, usually nothing to do with the main plot, or often nothing to do with the main plot. For example, Abe, he works as a paramedic and he cuts people out of car crashes. So you read quite a lot about living in Autopia, living in this sort of city dominated by cars. And when the accidents happen, it's Abe's job to go along with the claws of life, or jaws of life, or whatever they're called, and cut people out. And some of these scenes are actually some of my favourite in the book, but they weren't exactly crucial to the plot. And also, you know, Tashi, when he goes out and he goes surfing at midnight, you know, you don't get to spend a lot of time with this character. But when you do, you realise how well-rounded all of these characters are. And like I said before, it's like for every scene, I made a note of this, for every scene that actually has something to do with the plot and has something to do with the main character of Jim, you get like another one or two chapters on top of that, just to sort of make us understand that there's a wider world out there and wider themes being explored here. And yeah, it just, like I say, meanders all over the place, and we follow these characters and their sort of pointless lives, and they go to parties and take drugs a lot, and you're thinking, this shouldn't be interesting in any way. Well, that's what I was thinking. It's like, and Jim is a complete idiot and stupid. I'm thinking, oh man, he shouldn't really like this kind of person. And if I knew him in real life, I'd probably just slap him. But then by the end of the book, I'm just enjoying it all. You know, all of these. This world seems so real and these characters seem so real. I'm just enjoying spending time with them. It actually feels like I'm going to those parties with these same people. And at the end of the book, when Jim continues to be stupid, I felt myself rooting for him at the end of the book and sort of cheering him on. And I'm thinking, why am I cheering him on at this point? He's being an idiot like he has been for the rest of the book. And yet somehow Kim Stanley Robinson, he just pulled it out. You know, he just managed to pull out of this sort of like meandering, sprawling book some characters that you really care about and a plot which somehow exists on a level which is actually really interesting. And I don't know how he does it, but it's in that he does it somehow. Another character is Tom, who also appears in the first book, but, you know, he's sort of like, even though this is an alternative future, he's sort of got like this parallel character of the old man who people listen to and who tells stories and who somehow makes it through to the end of the book alive, even though you're thinking he might get through, he'll probably die by the end of the book, but in both books he makes it through. And that's a small spoiler for both of these books, both The Wild Shore and The Gold Coast, but there you go. Tom, more interesting in the first book, but also quite fun here in this book. Moving on then to the technology and science fiction kind of elements. As I mentioned before, not a whole lot of science fiction elements except that it's set in the future and it's a bit dystopian kind of thing. There's some cool weapons that Jim's father, Dennis, works on in his weapons company, his high-tech weapons company. And also there's some fun drugs as well, that Sandy, as the drug dealer, he also makes drugs, and some of those are quite interesting too. And then, of course, there's the cars that run on electric and they navigate themselves. But otherwise, as I said before, just big cities, really. And again, there's, like I said, also that it's like there's these technologies he doesn't mention. But that's good in a way, because it's sort of like to show that it doesn't matter what the future's like. The future, in Kim Stanley Robinson's mind, doesn't rely on any one technology, except maybe this electronic car technology. The rest of it, and maybe the drug taking as well, but the rest of it doesn't really matter. He just wants to write about a county that is crammed packed so full of people, there's no room for anything else. To put anything else on there, you've got to build higher. You can't build wider. There's nowhere to spread into now. And, of course, they're still using CDs and answering machines, like answerphones, but that doesn't really matter in a way, because it's not about the technology. It's about the urban sprawl. It's just about the scale of the people. It's the scale of the technology rather than the specific technology itself. A bit about the writing style. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the book, but I mention it here. Like Neuromancer and like Snow Crash, it's a third-person present tense narration, which means, you know, I guess in the future, well, not in the future, I guess in the past, they thought in the future everything will be fast-paced and happening now. Everything will be going quick and it'll be happening now. Everything will be present tense. He does this, he does that. He didn't do this, he didn't do that, but he's doing it now. Everyone's doing something right now because it's fast in the future, which is an interesting way. I guess you still see authors playing with this device even today. So I guess it works in some way. Otherwise, it doesn't add anything to the book. But crucially, it doesn't take anything away from the book. Once you get into it, you just, you know, your mind slots in and you're there and you're just going with it, and it's no problem at all. Things that do slightly skip in the way of your reading and sort of get in the way slightly. Well, it's not so much get in the way, but they definitely interrupt the flow. A segment of poetry sort of inserted into the narrative. So they're going to be going somewhere. They're driving down the book. It happens like on page 3 of the book. They set off and you get the page and you turn the page and immediately like half of the second page is this poem. And you're reading it and you're like, oh, okay, it's a poem. It's about cars. It's about different color lights and things. And you're thinking, well, what's really going on here? And then you suddenly work out, well, you don't suddenly, you slowly come to realize that Jim is a poet, but he's not very good at poetry. And you realize that he writes poems about Orange County, because that's where he's from, and that's his subject that he wants to talk about. And you realize that some of these are actually his poems. Very much like in the book Antarctica, you have these sort of short foreword poems, like when white snow, cold sky, or something like that. And you realize they're also written by one of the characters, a Japanese character who's there as an artist. Strangely enough, as Kim Stanley Robinson also went to Antarctica as an artist on an artist grant. Anyway, But yes, same kind of thing happening here. You realize that the poems inserted into it are actually poems by Jim. Thing is, Jim's not very good at poetry. At one point, he even does this experiment where he goes, oh, what if I take a poem and I mix it up and I write a computer program to scramble it for me and it puts the lines in different orders. And he does so, and it comes out reading very much like the original poem does. He can't tell the difference between one of his poems and one of his own poems scrambled again. And that's the kind of poetry that you're getting here. So it's actually a really quite fun postmodern trick that Kim Stanley Robinson's playing here. And also, the poems do actually add to the world of the book and add to the sort of the descriptions, because you can sum things up quite easily in a poem that you can't do quite so well to actually try and shoehorn into a story. Say a character wouldn't notice these things because they see it every day, but if the character writes a poem about it, then you can put it into the book as though he's noticing it for the first time, which is quite cool in a way. But then you get something on top of that, which is the history passages. Like, you realize, well, about a third of the way through the book, suddenly it goes into italics. Well, not into italics. It goes into a different font, sort of like an Arial font, instead of your normal Times New Roman kind of font. And you get, like, this history passage telling you about the early history Yeah, it's just sort of like a piece of history, like 4 or 5 pages worth of history of Orange County. You know, it's they lived here for over 7,000 years. You know, it talks about the very early people who lived on Newport, like in around Newport Bay in Orange County. And it starts like chapter 21. And you get a few pages of that. And then at the end it goes, and all that went away. You know, it talks about the people who come and then they disappear and away, and nobody knows where they went to here in Orange County. And then, of course, you work out later on that these chapters that are just dropped in wholesale, these history chapters, were also written by Jim himself. And you work that out much later on in the book, or you discover it, you know, you actually read about it later on. But I worked it out very early on. I worked out that, hey, the same guy doing the poetry is doing these history, bits of history. And they're very, the main reason why you can work it out is because they reflect Jim's politics very much so. And I guess that's what happens as well, that you can almost tell that Jim is reflecting Kim Stanley Robinson's politics very well, or his own history of thought. And this really brings back to the book Antarctica as well, because one of the main guys, one of the main three main characters in Antarctica, is almost the same character, or the same kind of character, the young guy looking for direction, reading a lot, philosophizing a lot, thinking a lot, but not actually knowing what to do in life. And that's the same kind of thing that comes through. So I think these are in some way Kim Stanley Robinson's alter ego, the way that he's putting his own politics in and his own themes and ideas into it. Generally, though, the writing is quite slick. I was never really confused by any of it. All the descriptions are great there. Also, he makes these great use of some turns of phrase which cleverly sum up, better than the poetry itself, actually, what Kim Stanley Robinson is trying to portray. One early example, when he's talking about like this ever-evolving, ever-growing city, as he said, grids laid over grids or something like that. And he just said, oh, grids laid over grids. That really does conjure up sort of the bustling city where, like you say, they tear stuff down and just lay new road plans over old road plans. And again, very well done. Very well written. I really enjoyed it. Some of the conversations are a bit jarring, and sometimes he goes, oh, and they were laughing, and this happened, and they couldn't stop laughing, and I'm like, well, I didn't really find that very funny. There's not a lot of humour in the book, and then when Kim Stanley Robinson wants to have characters laughing and having a good time, I couldn't really laugh along with them because I didn't get the jokes, and I didn't find what they found funny that funny, which is a bit of a pity. Anyway, finally, moving on to some of the themes of the book, lots of politics, but mainly in the sort of like war, boo, peace, yay, or in the kind of sort of like commercial, materialistic, sort of driven expansion, boo, and then small scale community living, everyone living communes, yay, kind of thing, which does seem to come out quite a bit in Kim Stanley Robinson's writing. But again, you've got to expect that for him, and you sort of just take it with a grain of salt that he's going to put these political views into his book. But there is always a discussion. It's never, hey, this is what I think. It's always like, hey, this is what I think. Ah, but what about the opposite side? Ah, what about this character? He's got a lot of good ideas. Maybe I think along these lines. Nah, maybe more like this. So it's good, well-rounded political discussion going on here. And of course, there's the whole sort of like eco kind of stuff going on too. Kim Stanley Robinson wants to live in a happy place with trees and grass and stuff like that. Not in not in this dystopia-like city where there's no grass, you know, of course, you know. But then again, I always find sort of dystopias to be too much of a statement on exactly this kind of thing. Utopias and dystopias are always constructed as a statement, which is why I find them a little bit tedious sometimes, a little bit clunky. But I think this is a good exploration because it's not just this book. He's done no technology, everyone living in communes and actually everyone being really poor and nobody living very long and everyone being unhealthy and dying and stuff like that. So he's actually done the opposite of this book. So I think actually over the series, probably the next book, I think it strikes the balance where it's sort of like a more utopia rather than a post-apocalyptic or future dystopia. I think it's a more of a utopian kind of book in the third one, but I've not read it, but I will get onto it. The main theme, though, of course, of this book, and I mentioned it before, is characters trying to get control of their lives or trying to find some control or trying to work out what is controlling them. And I think that's one of the main reasons why the technology of the self-navigating electric cars that run on rails is so well developed and other technology isn't. It's because Kim Stanley Robinson wants to use it over and over and over again as a metaphor for being in control or not being in control or driving around in circles or driving like above the city or driving down through the city or driving and not being able to find anywhere to park and stuff. You know, it's very much a book about, like I say, the autopia, the automobile utopia and how being in a car and living in a car and going on tracks and going off tracks and then using the car to destroy things and then going to pick people up and cut people out of crash cars. You know, it's all of it's there. It's all this metaphor going over and over again. Actually, later on in the book, it becomes a little bit more explicit and I'm thinking, well, okay, it was really clever before. Now it's not, you know, it's a bit too blatant. It's also the same with the drugs as well. It's like, okay, we're taking drugs. We're not in control. Ah, but if you control exactly what kind of drugs you take and the drugs are so well tailored that you know exactly what effects they're going to have on you, when you take controls, are you in control still by putting yourself out of control in a very controlled way? Oh, that's Pola's mobile phone going off. Pola?
Pola, your mobile phone.
I will just pause 1 second here. So after that small interruption of Pola's phone going off, which wasn't anyone, it's a friend of ours, Emil, who has now called Pola 3 times from his pocket, which is quite annoying. Anyway, so yes, I think I've finished talking about the themes there. It's all about control and finding control. Etc., etc. So, overall, I think this book is pretty decent, certainly above average for science fiction, I think, but I didn't find it anything great. I mean, it's not as great, it's not like a masterwork or like you would think his entire sort of Red Mars, Thingy Mars, Blue Mars would be. And I did, I'm not sure, actually, I think I did enjoy it just as much as The Wild Shore. The first book in this series, but I enjoyed it in a different way, and I actually think it's a better book than Antarctica, but probably I liked Antarctica more as a travel book, as something that inspired me and I found enjoyable because it was about an interesting place and a place I've been to and that interested me, unlike this book about Orange County, as I was talking about before. But it's pretty good. I look forward to reading the third in the series, and I think probably after you read the third in the series, it might all come together into one final statement about sort of like one overall statement that he wants to give, and I'm going to enjoy reading that, I think. So I'm going to give this 3.5 stars out of 5, meaning, well, I enjoyed it quite a lot. But it didn't leap out and grab me and sort of kick me in the balls. So, there we go, that's that book done with, and I'll get on to the next in the series later on. The next book that I'm reading, actually I'm reading a book right now, it's called Last and First Man by William Olaf Stapledon, and I'm actually getting through it. I tried reading it before as a real book, and it was like quite tedious because it felt like a big chunky book. Now I'm reading it on my iPod after downloading it from feedbooks.com or whatever it is called, and I'm getting through it a bit, a few chapters in. I'm not sure if I'm going to complete it yet, but I think I'll be happy not completing it, knowing what I'm going to get probably, because it's not a normal book. But I'll get onto that in its review in a episode, probably in a few books' time. Because next episode, well, it might be something special. You'll have to see when you download episode 60, or maybe it'll be 59 and a half. You'll see what I mean when you get there. Hopefully you'll enjoy that. Something's quite special coming up. Otherwise, keep in touch. Email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any book recommendations or any comments about my reviews or anything at all. If you want to read my novel, you can go to lukeburge.com and follow the links. Also, lukeburge.com/blog if you want to keep in touch. Well, not so much in touch. Keep up with all my travels and photography and videos and music and all the different kinds of stuff that I post on there. Or if you just want quick updates, lukeburge at Twitter or twitter.com/lukeburge. And the best way to give me book recommendations and to chat with other listeners of the podcast is to go to goodreads.com/lukeburge. Or check out the listeners of the sfbrp.com pod, or the SFBRP readers group, or something like that. You'll be able to work it out, I'm sure. Anyway, I've got on long enough with this one. About 30 minutes is good enough for this book and this episode. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll catch you next time.